Radiology and Tobacco is the title of today's talk, and I've been doing variations of this for a few years. I first received a set of slides from a colleague of mine who was chairman of Diagnostic Radiology at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, which is the largest cancer center in the world. And he and I had known each other. He joined my group called DOC, or Doctors of Care, which I started as a resident to work on the tobacco issue and other preventable causes of cancer and premature death. And he started noticing in his career that so much of what he did every day as a diagnostic radiologist was related to smoking. So clearly, this talk has not just the point of the commonality of all the lesions that I hope we'll be able to show that relate in some way to the devastating impact of smoking, but it also really has a couple of lessons. And one is basically doing what we do best as family physicians. In many ways, we have it over our radiologists. Good timing, because we're talking about smoking and radiology. So that was, but we it's... That's right. You know, it was just for the sound effect.
Oh, okay.
But I think that the basic moral is looking at prevention and what we do best, knowing our patients. Number two, specific data I'm going to show today on ionizing radiation, and be aware of every single test that we do, including for your laptops that are radiating right now as you test. And then also cost awareness. How much is a CT of the chest? There's a range, obviously. You can Google it. You can Google it right now, in fact. It's astounding. In Alabama, there is a wide range. That's why I was just looking for the numbers that I looked up. And it's anywhere from 1,200 to 3,000. And that's, I mean, how would you like to go to a haircut and say, well, you know, maybe I'll take the $10. No, how about the $100? And this is part of the problem of cost. What about a nuclear scan for the heart, or a stress nuclear scan? What does that run to?
700?
I want to go to your house. Its range is 3,800 to 12,000, depending where you are. In Anchorage, in Ketchikan, Alaska, a CT of the chest is $8,800. In North Carolina, the hospital I found is $700. This is incredible. In this country, we have a range of 700 to 8,800 for the same test. For a SPECT scan or the heart perfusion, it's 3,800 to 12,000, maybe even more, because people get billed for 26,000 and they try to itemize it. They don't even know what they're dealing with. So again, we have that milestone of cost, so that was my cost awareness point for today. This resident who worked at a VA hospital wrote about his experience. Where, as you know, in veterans hospitals, upwards of 60% of all patients have a history of smoking. On some days, literally every patient I treated was suffering from the adverse effects of cigarette smoking. I have witnessed the pain and suffering of unimaginable proportions. People riddled with lung cancer or other tumors throughout their bodies, or paralyzed from a stroke, or unable to breathe and gasping for air due to emphysema, or experiencing excruciating pain due to their angina or heart attack, or having a limb amputated due to poor circulation, or having liters of fluid drained daily from their lungs due to a spreading cancer, or hallucinating from tumors that had spread to their brain. I know that smoking directly caused all of that suffering, and I know this horrifying reality repeats itself daily in every hospital around the world. I gave a grand rounds back in the days when we had a grand rounds that everybody attended, all the different specialties, and this was when I was a resident. And the chief resident neurosurgery came up to me and says, wow, thanks, this is really important to talk about smoking. I said, well, with all due respect, you're probably the last specialty that would deal with. He says, no. How about metastatic cancer to the brain that we see every day? Primaries coming from the lung. He says, your message is very, very important. So keep in mind, just as we're relearning how to speak on vaccinations these last few weeks, as the measles outbreak has occurred, because people coming from overseas, perhaps, have interacted with people who, for whatever reasons, have not had the vaccination. We have to start all over again and talk to people about something that we had eradicated. So I hope you won't forget that we've got to talk to people as family physicians
all over the family, who's at home and anybody smoked, because that's where it starts. Your, quote, ownership of the practice will enable you and your practice partners to get ahead of the curve, so that a lot of these costs and a lot of these tumors won't be there. So it's rather cliched to introduce it like that, but I really do believe that if you look at it by not just treating the numbers, the World Health Organization, and you know that's my old point when you come with a hypertensive analogy, example, that we're looking at numbers, or the hemoglobin A1C, we're great at numbers. We see the bad number, we treat it, we get the numbers down. But the World Health Organization fully 10 years ago suggested that we're targeting the wrong patients. Anybody can treat somebody with an elevated blood pressure level or an elevated hemoglobin A1C. It's those who have the sedentary lifestyles, who are obese, who have a family history of hypertension and heart disease. That's where we gotta dig, and that's where we have to literally either medicate or target our medication earlier, which is somewhat contradictory for someone who doesn't like to prescribe as first out of the gate, but maybe then on the quote borderline people, we ought to be a little bit more aggressive in medication, and not only worrying about the people who already have the diagnosis. So the American College of Radiology and American College of Internal Medicine have all issued, and in New York State, they have passed out to every physician little cards to have parents record every single x-ray and image that they get, because we're dealing with a situation where there are now 4 million CTs on children in this country every year. And there have been guidelines that have been issued. We're going to go over those. But it's astounding that we are still ordering an excess number of CTs in kids. And we are giving a certain percentage of them cancer. It's estimated that now maybe as many as 1 to 2% of all cancers is directly as a result of the radiation that we administer, especially to children. So we have guidelines that are being sent. I have a license in New York, and I got one of these. And with that kind of introduction in mind, let's take a look at a lot of images. Now, this is a chest x-ray that apparently has, you can spot it, I can't, but I went and dug up reports. About 4 years ago, Dr. Ellis was mulling over this x-ray and I overheard, and there was a report that found an 8 millimeter lesion somewhere in this area here. I honestly, you know, I've had people look at this and I don't know, but that's how subtle it is to diagnose a cancer on a chest x-ray. You know, I don't think it's any easier to find it here in the lateral. I'm sure it's some one or two of you could come up and spend a while and look at it, but this is just to show that we see chest x-rays every day, and most of the lung cancers that you're going to hear about are eluding us, and they're eluding the radiologists. So why show this? It's again to go over history, and to look at back previous films, and always to compare. And if you still are suspecting something, order another chest x-ray. If this patient's never had one, order another one in 4 to 12 weeks just to compare there. It's not a pure science. So you've read a lot about low-dose CT for lung cancer. I heard a couple of residents discussing that a few weeks ago. What's the evidence for that? It's now being recommended in patients with a strong smoking history to order a low-dose CT to detect lung cancer. Does anyone know the number to screen that would result in the saving of a life? 320. Actually, it's worse than that because you have to do 3 CTs a year over 2 years, apparently. So it's an enormous amount of radiation, and it's suspected that you're giving at least 1 in 1,000 such patients a cancer in trying to detect a cancer. So we know the radiation that is emitted from the ionizing studies, x-rays, CTs, nuclear medicine, fluoroscopy. And what about the radiation risk? A mammogram is 30 chest x-rays, a HIDA scan 185, a lumbar series 100. And you say, well, what is, you know, how does that, you know, 100 chest, what does that really mean? I think ambient radiation that we get every year is the equivalent to roughly 50 chest x-rays that all of us are getting. So, you know, it's how you look at it. But after a while, when you add up sending somebody for a CAT and an angioplasty, you're talking upwards of 2,500 chest x-rays. And a CT of the abdomen, which is the one that is most worrisome because that's the one that's perhaps done most frequently, in emergency rooms and CT the chest, look at the numbers of chest x-ray equivalents that you're getting. Now, since the advent of CT, that seems to have become a real problem. Back in 1980, medical procedures accounted for just this small amount of the total dose of radiation that we all got. Now, we're getting about half of the radiation. Let's see, how does that look? But you see this pink part here. That's all the interventions that we're now doing. Americans get the most medical radiation in the world. In 2006, it accounted for more than half of all radiation exposure, up dramatically from the early 1980s. So, safer ultrasound, MRI, your own lab tests can help you even better in many instances than some x-rays, an EKG, and an observation. You know, think about that as another kind of a test. So, fortunately, we're leveling off a little bit of the CT orders. And the American College of Radiology has issued a guideline that says, don't do a head CT in a headache that doesn't have anything dicey, especially not in children. There is no reason almost ever to do a CT of the head in a child. Pulmonary embolus, well, do the VQ scan or do your D-dimer and whatever, but you have to have a high probability for a pulmonary embolus before you would order a CT of the chest. No need to do pre-op or admission chest x-rays if the physical exam and history is otherwise unremarkable. If you've got a suspected appendicitis in a child, and that child has had a previous CT of the abdomen, I sure hope you're considering, even though it's possible that you might again have to do that, that there's an ultrasound that can be done. If it's racing to get to the operating room, then just go ahead to surgery. Ovarian cysts, if they're otherwise clinically unremarkable, there's no need to do any kind of pelvic CT. And think about it. When you do order things that, you know, let's flip the coin, let's order this CT on this guy who's been smoking so many years. What if you find something? Well, you got to have more tests. Where's the patient? The patient doesn't know what's going on because you're not quite sure what's going on either until you have tissue. It leads to a lot of morbidity and mortality even. And it's stress on us. So headache in a young child is almost never a serious problem, almost never worth getting a CT. So this is another problem that you've read about last week in the New England Journal. Smoking, again, it's not good for my business. I wish we didn't have it. But the fact of the matter is I've spent most of my career working on this issue. And part of the reason why I don't see the buy-in among physicians is I think it's just too intellectually a gut. Everybody knows about it. Patients already know, I'm just going to do this. If you spend that extra 30 seconds to 1 minute just saying, hey, you know, let's talk about it. Which would you rather have? You want to go in the hospital again? Or let's, you can say to yourself, well, you know, this guy's been smoking 30 years. What difference does it make? Well, how about operative? Perioperative recovery is much easier in someone who's stopped. It's the cough, the symptoms can go away. Your MI risk is reduced almost immediately when you stop smoking. And it normalizes in about 10 or 15 years, which isn't bad. Unfortunately, lung cancer risk seems to never come down. And that's just the problem. So this notion of, well, they've been smoking so long, it doesn't really matter, that really only applies to cancer. And then this is what led us to look at a CT, because chest x-rays do not work as a lung cancer screening device. By the time you see a lesion on a chest x-ray, such as that first one that I showed that we can't even find, you've got more cell divisions than is probably survival. So, you know, this is the data, and this is what the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force has bought into. But remember Jonathan Parker, who is a real skeptic of, evidence-based medicine, because he looked at it as, it's population-based medicine. It's not that individual patient. And he wrote a very good editorial in the American Osteopathic Journal last year, challenging some of the mantra of evidence-based medicine, saying, let's not forget the patient. And a perfect example of this is the question of whether to order low-dose CT of the chest in order to diagnose lung cancer. I think, you know, this is where the money is doing so-called lifestyle. If you look at the cardiovascular, the hypertensive recommendations, it's always lifestyle at the top of the pyramid. We don't like to stop and think about it because we're much more adept at looking at different kinds of medications, but I think
the payoff is going to be on touching that patient's wrist and talking to them about making those small changes that are going to make the difference. So we know that leading causes of death. The only thing that these have in common, as far as I can figure, is smoking. Smoking, I mean, cancer is not related necessarily to COPD, and accidents has to do with fire. Diabetes isn't really caused by smoking, it's just made much worse by it. So that's about the only link that I can find among them. And if we go to lung cancer, we're talking, we're flatlined on that. We are slightly going down in men, but we're going up in women. There are more women diagnosed right now with lung cancer than men. This is the ratio. And that survival, as you're seeing, as you're going to see, is not improved. We haven't improved our lung cancer survival in 40 years. So you could say it starts with a solitary lesion. In most cases, that's the case. But any unexplained shadow could be a lung cancer. This is a common presentation of bronchogenic CA, the main airways of a collapsed lobe. It can present it as an infiltrate. It can be hidden in an effusion. 50 to 80% can be survivable if they're peripheral and they're found very early. So that's where the low-dose CT comes in. But if you're under 35, don't really worry. This is the gray area, 35 to 45, and if the same lesion has been present 2 years, and I followed that chest x-ray that I showed at the beginning, and sure enough, that lesion is still there 4 years later. So the good news for that woman that had that chest x-ray that I first showed is it's not cancer. A new nodule in any patient who's had cancer or who has cancer is most likely to be malignant. Then you consider calcification. If you have an eccentric calcification where there's a little bit sort of around the edges of it, that's a more malignant sign. So just calcification itself doesn't necessarily mean malignancy. We define it as a 3 centimeter nodule or less. That's a solitary pulmonary nodule. 2/3, fortunately, are peripherally, and a radiologist group was tested, and they missed 90% of the peripheral lesions, less than 1 centimeter. So rely on your history, rely on past films. Don't be ashamed to get out the past films, but the key to reading a chest x-ray is not going for the abnormality. We'll go over that in just a second. Look at the overall, this is the continuation of the leading causes of death. Among men, among women, this is just when you take a look at, when you break it down to only those groups that smoke. In other words, we look at cardiovascular risk factors, but when we have just that one cardiovascular risk factor, that's how many deaths a year there are attributable to smoking. And I don't know how this one is different. More men, more little boys die than little girls die from perinatal conditions. And this is a differential also. More men are dying from fire. It's not unremarkable that more women die from secondhand smoke because more male spouses have traditionally smoked and more in the workplace. So there it is. That's the lung cancer that we dread. And I used to say that's the good lung on the left and the bad lung on the right. Somebody pointed out, well, it's not exactly still in the patient, so you know it's probably not good either. But that's what we all should have. This is anthracotic staining. This is living in a polluted area. It doesn't mean that lung cancer is any more common in Iowa than it is in New York City. It's the same. And the only factor that New York City and Iowa have, really, is smoking. The estimated cancer deaths, 3 times as many lung cancer deaths as the next leading cause in men, and nearly twice as many as the next leading cause in women. But when you look at the survival, this is the real sad part. Pancreatic cancer, of which the dean of the medical school in Birmingham is the big expert, he himself says, look at, we may have doubled our survival, but it's still only 1 in 20. And look at the second one, lung cancer survival from almost more than 40 years has barely increased in its survival. Another way that Dr. Dunnington looked at this was if you take 1,000 20-year-olds who smoke, 6 are going to be murdered, 12 are going to die in car accidents, and 500 of those who smoke are going to die from a tobacco-related disease. What's in it? 4,000 to 100,000 chemicals, over 70 known cancer causers, and some of these chemicals are actually more present in the smoke that's called secondhand smoke that's coming off that you're breathing
then is, quote, filtered through the mouth of the person who smokes. And again, on radiation, this is a leading cause of radiation, too. There's actually polonium in cigarette smoke that's absorbed by the tobacco. So this is a far greater risk to the person who's smoking than almost all of these other things. This is, I guess, radon, and I don't know what terrestrial radiation is besides radon. And so again, it's just another way to bring these issues together of prevention, radiation. So how do you approach a chest X-ray? A couple of tips. Don't go to the report first, it's too easy. And again, the good news is we have a backup report, but you are actually more likely to come up with a diagnosis than the radiologist because you know the history and you know the labs. You're getting any test to confirm what you're thinking, not to do a crapshoot. So stand back, go 6 feet back and take a look, and don't just concentrate on the one abnormality you're thinking of, do the whole thing. Does anybody have a system? Because I couldn't find any one system. I have a great article, but it's from 20 years ago. Anybody have some good tips that they've learned on reading chest X-rays? Their favorite tip? Anything that they've found that maybe even the radiologist had missed by looking at it in a different way? Famous chest X-ray stories? Well, I've got to check both sides, make sure that the name is correct and that it's left and right is marked properly. Those are other things. Any other faux pas that you've seen on chest X-ray readings or problems with them? Density, so that you don't just go right to the interstitial markings. You want to compare those with previous films because that's a common way that we get fooled. Wow. So again, family medicine, thank you. Front lines, family medicine, really, you have as much a role in a chest X-ray as the radiologist. Just try to, that wonderful word parenchyma, that's the lung and everything in it. Try to visualize your trachea, your main stem bronchi, and you can't always see them, obviously. Make sure that to compare both sides. Look not only the apices, but the medial aspect of the apices. That's where those Pankos tumors can lie. And divide up the mediastinum between the lateral and the AP, thinking of what's the anterior, what's posterior, and what's medial mediastinum. There's a long list of differential. And then chest wall is the bones, the ribs, the clavicle, and anything else that's not included in the others. I know it's just trying to simplify something. Everybody has their own. Some people do ABC, airway, and what's C? I don't even know. But clavicle VC. I don't know of any other. I haven't found any good mnemonic. So let's take a look at a typical chest X-ray, right? Yeah. Trick photo that Dr. Dunnington did of the Marlborough-induced chest X-ray. But what about that? Anybody wanted to comment on that? And I'll tell you about this patient. He's had a 40-year smoking history. He quit 20 years ago. What do you think is going on here? Anybody, just comment. Trach is not, that's a good point. It's way out to that way. The what? Yes, I agree. I'll give you another hint. He also had a carcinoma of the bladder. He also had a right inguinal carcinoma. And he had a left adrenal carcinoma. And he's got something here. What? Yeah, it's a right hilar mass with partial collapse. That's how that was written. Was there a previous one? I don't have that available. But this is just a classic example of a mass that also shows atelectasis. Same patient. And, in reading CTs, this is what's known as a lung window, and this is the soft tissue window, because CTs work on density. When you move that lever to move it one way or the other, up and down. It's the relative density of the tissue. So your lung window shows at that mass that we just saw here, and the tissue window really shows the mass. And this was, anyone want to guess what part of the body that is? Is that a no? But that's correct. So here's your bladder mass, that's with contrast. But this is the bladder mass that that patient had. So let's try another patient. Believe me, when I got these x-rays, I didn't have the key. So I spent days and weeks looking, trying to figure these out. And then, of course, he sends me the key. And indicating where supposedly things are. Another 40-year, 2 to 3 pack cigarette smoking patient. Any other thoughts on him? What part are we talking about? Anything look a little strange? Right, up there. It's a right upper lobe mass that was proven to be adenocarcinoma of the lung. Your soft tissue window showed it, and then your lung window showed it too. And that, same patient, an MRI of the brain with contrast. What are we saying? Metastatic cancer with edema. Or a CT of the brain, same patient, with contrast, same findings. So this one, anyone want to tackle this one? He had 1.5 packs a day for 50 years. So they give you a hint by showing this closer tomographic view of the apices. Well, a little subtle, but see that? And I think this is the other one. Bilateral adenocarcinoma of the lung. And that's showing both, in the lung views, both cancers. And the radio-guided biopsy. And that one. Same patient. Anything that you're seeing here on the cervical spine? Very hard. Excuse me?
Hypotensity
on?
Yes.
No. Bone metastases destroyed the disc space in C4, C5. This is an MRI of the spine. Multiple bone metastases. He says, I think this is a herniated disc. There's a herniated disc in the cervical spine and a large lumbar spine. So, any event, I don't read those verbs, but I think we're talking clearly in that area. Higher here.
The lumbar.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hieroglyphics in many ways. This is a PET scan. Awful, isn't it? It's sort of scary. I mean, this is the scariest slide I have. It's like, looks like one of those mummies in the sarcophagus that they're doing the scan. And so literally every part of the body has metastases. These are all apparently, or a lot of these are bone metastases in the extremities. And I mean, I don't know. It's just all over. It's lit up all over. Two. How about this CAT scan? Patient with a left breast cancer, and what else? A right, lower lobe lung cancer. Adenocarcinoma from different tumors. She smoked a half pack a day for 50 years. So the breast cancer, I guess, does that seem about right? That, and then the answer there. This is the PET scan version of it. All of this
absorption here apparently is the cancer. And another view, another PET scan. Patient with left breast cancer, right lower lobe lung cancer, both adenocarcinoma from different tumors. PET CT shows FDG uptake in left breast, smoked a half pack a day for 50 years. And this one, 57-year-old with new left breast cancer and small cell cancer in the left lower lobe with mediastinal adenopathy. Patient smoked a pack a day for 34 years. Small cell cancer is very closely associated with smoking, and that's the most devastating cancer. You're talking a minimal survival in small cell cancer. So clearly, I have awful lesion.
Isn't that the other?
No, this is... this is a...
That was your patient report.
57-year-old, half back a day. No, this is a different patient. This is what I was doing, you know, when I got this. I couldn't tell one from another. 58-year-old man who had a seizure. CT of the brain demonstrated multiple brain mets. Chest x-ray demonstrated a left upper lobe mass, a right hyalur mass with bilateral lung cancers. So I presume this is this. And does anybody see it? Is it that? I can't really tell. Or is it up there? Hard to see it from close up. He's saying it's actually right there. Bilateral lung cancer. And this 58-year-old man who had a seizure, same thing. CT of the brain demonstrated multiple brain metastases. Chest x-ray demonstrated left upper lobe mass and right hyalur mass with bilateral lung cancer. CT chest demonstrates emphysema and a left upper lobe lung cancer. Started smoking at age 12, smoked three packs a day for 42 years. So the widened area is indicative of emphysema. And he's showing, I don't think there's much else other than, I think he's indicating that there's a, I don't know where the other tumor is on that one. Does anybody spot a tumor in that film? Well, this is a CT angio, 58-year-old man, same patient. And this is demonstrating a emphysema in a left upper lobe lung cancer. CT angio shows thrombi in the right pulmonary arteries. So he's indicating that these thrombi are, I think these are what he's talking about here. And just another... before we go into other things, this is a chest x-ray of the right upper lobe Pankos tumor and right lower lobe lung cancer. Status post coronary artery bypass and abdominal aortic aneurysm, smoked two packs a day for 50 years. So right upper lobe and right lower lobe lung cancer. And I think he's talking about this whole area right there, which you can see again. This is a node, and the Pankos tumor is this, and it is destroying the ribs. This is an MRI showing the involvement of the spine and the main thing, and then the Pankos tumor, the right lower lobe lung cancer. So, tumor and involved in the spine. So that's Sean Marcy. Sean was a high school track star in the 1980s. He died at 19. After using Skoll and Copenhagen for 7 years. He died of an oral cancer. And it's a very well-known figure in medical history because his parents were the first to sue a tobacco company because of oral cancer. And they lost the case because the experts for the defense, the tobacco companies, one of whom was from MD Anderson Cancer Center, said, well,
there's a lot of things that could cause cancer, a lot of genetics, and his lesion was on the other side. It wasn't where he usually put his, you know. And after that case, physicians at MD Anderson were barred from ever testifying on behalf of the tobacco industry. So there is a, he started smoking at age 10. This is a different patient. Started smoking at age 10 and smoked 2 to 3 packs for 60 years. The head of the CT head and neck with showed three primary head and neck tumors, all squamous cell. One is supraglottic, one left oropharyngeal, and one of the palate. So we're talking, one is here, and we're talking there, and obviously the main one is apparently right there. This is the same patient with a CT of the head, and it's directing me to this area here, which is showing the, presumably the supraglottic or palatal. I don't know what reading that. Anybody have any ideas on that? Still trying to figure that one out. And this is a modified barium swallow in a patient who smoked 40 years. There's a squamous cell cancer in the base of the tongue and supraglottis. Note that the patient has no teeth. The largest cause of periodontal disease is smoking. Smoked 40 years. So he's talking about a big mass in that area there and no teeth along the mandible. And he's saying this is some aspiration in this area. This is a CT head and neck showing a very large tumor at the base of the tongue extending down to the larynx. And note that the patient has no teeth, largest cause of periodontal disease is smoking. So this whole thing is tumor. And there's a tumor in there. This is a right hypopharynx squamous cell carcinoma. Patient chewed tobacco and smoked a pipe. Was already cured from esophageal cancer years ago. So more of the same laryngeal cancer in here in a patient who had 60 pack years. There was also a tongue cancer in that patient. This is a squamous cell carcinoma of the larynx following a total laryngectomy. Now has recurrence of the stoma and the pharyngeal wall. I can't see the densities, but you can see where densities vary, and that's where he's pointing. Arrows are left, and they're pointing into all of that area. And this is a squamous cell carcinoma of the larynx with tracheostomy, 3 to 4 packs a day for 50 years. So you see the tracheostomy. I'm going to skip forward to a few of these to show you the other kind of lesions. And your heart scans, I don't know if anybody has read these personally or been and reviewed them with the radiologist, but they're pretty neat. But these are the things that cost all that much money to do. So what are you looking for when you see this? Any signs that you know of? What would be bad? What would be good? You want to see a lot of orange up there. That's the stress apex. And, that's the stress part of it up there, apex to base. And then the second row is the resting apex to base. The third row and the fourth row is the short axis. And the fourth and fifth rows, the vertical axis, the long axis, and the last two rows, the horizontal long axis. So if you've got your septum, and then your lateral, and then your apex, I guess that's how it works. You want to see a lot of orange in those first two rows. You don't want to see blue And when you're looking at the perfusion defect, you want to see, you'll see more of the, you'll see much more of this. So the ejection fraction here was only 16%. The more you see a donut, the less worry you have. Anybody have any other experience with this? Because I certainly don't. The reading was perfusion defects or scar tissue from a prior MI, mid to distal anterior wall, septum, lateral wall, inferior wall, and dilated left ventricle. This patient was a 3-pack-a-day smoker for 50 years, large and severe fixed perfusion defects, presenting scar tissue from prior MI and mid to distal anterior wall, septum, and lateral walls. That's the same patient, but showing a pretty bad example of what an abnormal stress test looks like. The more common things that we see are the angiograms, and you can pretty much spot areas that you don't like. Do you see any areas that you're not comfortable with? Yeah, how about that one right at the top? And then there's a narrowed area there too. Severe stenosis. What changes can you spot in these in this particular film? There are about 4 findings that you could make out just by looking at that film. What's the obvious one? Is what? Yeah, there's a pacemaker. There's a sternotomy. Yeah, or perhaps, you know, there's sternal wires, perhaps a coronary artery bypass. That's 2. And what about to the actual tissues themselves? They're reading this as hyperinflated lungs, and they're reading this as an enlarged heart. So there are 4 findings there. And that's the lateral. And that's your the same findings in a CT. This is considered a dilated left ventricle. No musculature at apex, whatever that means. Okay. And a CT of the abdomen showing an abdominal aortic aneurysm with a stent in a patient who smoked 2 packs a day for 40 years. That's another view, same patient. And abdominal aortic aneurysm with a stent, 2 packs a day for 40 years. So you see the stent? Hard to make it out. Yeah. It doesn't say specifically, but I wish I could. And this is fairly straightforward. Iliac arteriogram, occlusion of the left femoral artery. Certainly can spot a number of arterial occlusions, but things just sort of stop. And this is a left femoral arteriogram with occlusion of the left femoral artery, 100 pack years of smoking. And again, the same area. Those are collaterals that have developed. And then that one, variation on theme. You're seeing atherosclerotic changes of the popliteal artery and trifurcation artery, 100 pack years of smoking. So you see all those little staccato narrowings in that artery. This is a complete stenosis of the aorta. Boom, just ends there. This is a normal carotid ultrasound. And this is read as a narrowing. This is read as a narrowed area right there. I don't read these, so I don't know. But I'm just giving you a flavor of what our patients are ordering. when or getting when these tests are being ordered. This is atherosclerotic calcification of the iliac arteries, but not the femoral. So he's pointing to some calcifications on this side and on the other side. And this is atherosclerotic right coronary artery, left anterior descending circumflex, severe atherosclerotic status post CABG with severe calcification of the coronary arteries and the iliac arteries. It's a beautiful film. This is a CT angiogram of the neck showing calcified carotid bifurcations bilaterally. So I presume that a lot of this is calcifications. So more of the same, just giving you a lot of these images, and I think mostly to show the complexity of the extraordinary labor intensivity of these things. Many of these are totally avoidable. I could show you some small babies on ultrasound. He's got a few dozen more different kinds of tissue examples. But again, to summarize, you could literally do an entire course on smoking-related diseases, and indeed in French Canada, they produced this poster that a lot of physicians have on their wall, going head to toe: hair loss, cataracts, wrinkling, hearing loss, skin cancer, tooth decay, emphysema, osteoporosis, heart disease, stomach cancers, stomach ulcer, discolored fingers, uterine cancer, miscarriage, deformed sperm, psoriasis, Buerger's disease, cancer. And that's one way. Scare tactics, I suppose, have a role, but the most important role is your caring, you're being supportive and working on small lifestyle changes and being aware of the cost, both emotionally and physically, to patients for the ordering of some really expensive and, for the most part, futile radiologic tests. So other comments, last minute, questions, concerns, things that you would change from this? This is really the first time.